This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri, and we are in the studios with Rocky Jones and Cliff Lynn, and they are here to make everything better than it was before. So I just want to say before we begin that you two guys are the ones that put poetry on the map in the Annapolis area for 20 years. Some people didn't even know about poetry until you two came on the scene with all of your projects and your readings. But right now you are the poets, not the presenters, and we'd like to hear a poem from each of you. First of all, say your name so they know which is which.
I'm Cliff Lynn.
I'm Rocky Jones.
And so let's hear a poem. Tell us what you're going to do.
I'm going to read a poem. This was published in Grub Street. And it's from my unpublished manuscript, Outside Dog. Australia. I'm anxious to compose a gospel tune in the language spoken by rain. Mm-hmm. Belted out by parishioners of every denomination and with equal passion on death row and by all the world's cab drivers. Maybe I'll draft a barefoot manifesto to wander with purpose about the planet, a postcard to a family named Trout living at no fixed address. Always alone, even in company, sometimes my manifesto might hop a train. One day I'll write an essay, concise and serious as sausage, and so completely profane but without profanity that upon breaching the inner perimeter, even the most cynical whoreson bloodmonger will crawl up into the fetal position and weep for mercy. Penultimately, I plan to pen a poem that will take up surfing off of Australia, bending at its tanned adverbial waist, toes timeless as metaphors gripping the board, maneuvering through monster waves. And when it wipes out, as all poems eventually wipe out, my verse will just climb back up and grinning chase the next 30-footer.
And it will. I promise you, Cliff Lynn, it will. Rocky Jones is next.
I have a tiny little self-published book called My Demo, and this is in it. And
it's a chapbook.
Are you correcting him already?
No, I'm
you're helping.
I'm providing a little bit of clarity.
I let other people call it a chapbook. I call it a book.
Are you going to argue this early?
No.
We've just gotten on the air.
I am letting him call it a chapbook, but I don't.
Well, now I think I'm calling the program over.
Let's shut it down. She's shutting it down.
Here you go.
This is also about the creative process. It's called input. How many critique sessions does it take to edit the smile off the Mona Lisa? And how many to have Poe abandon Nevermore for not so much, to make the Raven a magpie? Instructions for ruining a perfectly good effort. 1, subject your art to input by well-meaning people who are not you. 2, worship that input, believe in it, sanctify it. 3, make the recommended changes. 4, feel icky about it. I admit it, I don't press the pencil to paper hard enough when I draw. Yes, I tell and don't show when I write.
Oh.
Yes, my painting of Monument Valley is unintentionally phallic. You want to know if I care? Quoth the magpie, not so much.
That was Rocky Jones, and we are glad. Now, I have their bios, but they don't tell you very much. They say one thing that Rocky Jones says is that this book is available out of the trunk of his car in any well-lit, well-populated parking lot, and his favorite poets are songwriters and his best friends. We'll find out more about you. Cliff Lynn. Did you really audition for The Gong Show when you were 13?
I did.
You always wanted to be a star?
Well, I wanted to be on The Gong Show. I mean...
And you didn't get it.
No, I was rejected. And they promised me a t-shirt, which I didn't get.
It's not too late, though, to protest. And so you were 13, and you went to an audition?
Yes.
And what did they ask you to do to be on The Gong Show?
Well, I just had my little act. I sat behind a desk in the dark. It was a completely dark room with a light shining on me. And they said, go. And I read what I was going to read. And they said, thank you. And they ushered me out. And that was the last I heard from them.
And then you joined the military.
That forced me to join the military, yes.
Well,
that incident.
And I must say, they're both well-published, these two. They're in great literary magazines all over America, but right now they are just ours in the studios of the Library of Congress. So you're doing something called a pistol act. Is that pistol reading?
No,
there's no,
the
no
lightning
weapon
round.
In the Library of Congress, Grace. There was a sign out front. We had to leave our pistols in the car.
Oh, so what is the pistol reading?
Oh, the lightning round.
Oh, the lightning round.
It's different.
I had a wrong nomenclature. Well, what is a lightning round, Rocky?
We choose some of our shortest poems and just, as you have said to us, ping pong them. Read one, read one, read one, read one.
That should be exhilarating. I need to be awakened today. So who begins this round?
I start it, and we're just going to blow through them, but I do want to introduce the first one.
I hope so.
By saying that I workshopped this poem with Elisaveta Ritchie. She suggested cutting a line, and I was like, I'm not going to cut that line. But it nagged at me for a year. And a year later, I'm like, ugh, she's right.
You are, listen to these workshop leaders.
Sometimes.
They're in it for the 50
it's
bucks.
It's Lisa Ritchie, Grace, for God's sake.
I know. I've loved her so long. We gave the first poetry reading in Washington, D.C., outside of the Library of Congress in 1967. Yeah, she's awesome. So do you want to just read us that one line or the whole poem?
The line's gone.
Oh.
The line is gone.
You believed her. Let's hear the poem without the line.
Okay.
I kind of miss it already, the line.
No, she was
right.
Brilliant, yeah.
Really?
So I don't know.
You're going to start and then he's going to continue.
Yep, it'll just keep going.
I hope so.
Weeping willow hangs low for the world, knowing its sorrows.
Mm.
Beautifies the landscape, but knows. Sees the child outnumbered on the playground, reaches down.
Mm, beautiful. You're supposed to do it now, Cliff.
Thank you, Grace. Omaha, where the average driver doesn't behave as if his butthole is on fire.
You never really know whose head is hosting the War of the Gargantuas at any given time. Maybe there's someone in Vegas on stage right now getting hit in the face with the flying panties of adoring fans while in his head fly the fiery fists and hammers of unrest.
Political poem, January 17th, 2017. This is the most frightening Stephen King novel I've ever been a minor character in.
She bleeds strawberry seeds, has a golden mane of thistle weeds. Hummingbirds make frequent trips to taste the juices on her lips.
Mm.
Not at all bothersome that her timber resembles a Christmas fur wrapped in razor wire tinsel on fire. If she's the right girl singing from your bed on a Saturday morning, no matter how grisly her voice, she sounds like strawberry cream on fire.
Mm.
The orb of knowing and the cube of knowing are about to feel one another's gravity.
Hey, love is a bus. Come on, let's throw ourselves under.
What happens in New Orleans stays in your soul and attacks you in your dreams until some miracle of nature or shamanism clears it out of you like a devilish diarrhea.
I could never be sure, but I grew up with an idea that the woman who raised me wasn't my biological mother. I always wondered whether she knew. Father was aware, though. It was in the way he studied me over the morning newspaper, like I was the ingredients label on a can of some strange soup.
Opossum, your beaded stare slices open the blasphemer that named you.
Well, that could be just one poem. If we put them all together, it could be the American Poetry Review, because it has everything in it. It has love, it has sadness, it has imagery, it has a lost line, a mysterious lost line. That was terrific. But I do have a question. Do they really drive that well in Omaha?
Oh, my God. Rush hour, if you put your blinker on, they slow down and let you change lanes.
Slow down?
On the freeway.
That is a little known fact.
Yeah.
You heard it here on The Poet and
Great
the Poem.
Great stakes, and the drivers are wonderful.
You sure you just didn't go there on opposite day?
I was there for like 4 or 5 days.
Opposite day. I love it. Well, Cliff and Rocky have been together a long time, and they've established poetry as an institution in the Maryland area. So before we hear more poetry, you are a Marylander, Rocky Jones?
Born and raised, Calvert County.
And how do you like that?
it kind of had to be there.
It's beautifully rural.
It was beautiful. I was actually there when it was beautifully rural, and there are spots that are now.
Oh, really? It's been gentrified?
I mean, just compared to, 1972 and all.
Yeah, compared to 1972, I'm not as well as I used to be either. But, Rocky, how did you two even get together from such disparate worlds? Cliff, you were in the military.
I was in the military.
And then you didn't get enough of it, so you became a worker for the government in Iraq.
Well, I've traveled, yeah. I retired from the military in 2001. I joined the local Department of Defense agency. And I was fortunate enough to be able to travel to Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait, Yemen, other places, yeah. In addition to, Germany for a couple of days and Hawaii once, so that was nice.
And was there ever danger?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're in
Iraq.
Afghanistan and
like
Iraq.
So yeah. Yeah.
But, I was never shot at, or as far as I know.
Well, wait till this program's over.
Okay.
Rocky, let's hear another poem. You guys have done good in Annapolis and Maryland. You've done such good. And the Evil Grin is now a little north in Greenbelt. I mean, it's all over the place.
Oh, well, the Evil Grin itself, the poetry series, is either in hiatus or retired. We haven't decided.
But it started in 2005, mm-hmm. and that's a long time ago. That's almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it in every coffee bar, every restaurant, any place you could get a venue, you would fill it full of poets. And so I love that, Rocky. What?
But you mentioned Greenbelt, and I want to say that there is a series there that I host.
Let's have some poems.
Can we do something interactive this time?
Oh, I don't know. You're trying our patience.
So, Grace, I have a list poem. I love to do list poems. This one is called 10 Things I Love That Most People Seem to Hate. And I want to take one of these lines out of here. And it's up to you to guess which of the lines I want to take out of here.
But Cliff, can he help me?
No.
No.
Oh,
no,
dear.
This is all on you, Grace.
No, no. Go ahead.
And I'll give you one hint. It's not that one.
I am extremely nervous being a poetry critic.
10 things I love that most people seem to hate. Static. Chandler. Bare trees, burnt food, overcast days, dubbed movies, the smell of gasoline, the breakup of the Beatles, American remakes of French films, accidentally smacking my wrist on a doorknob.
I'm partial to the wrist. But
don't worry about this mark here. I just wanted you to look at it.
Wait a minute. You've already loaded the deck.
No.
That's
not related. That's not related.
Okay. Well, I think I'm the one I would take out seriously.
The one you would take out?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. You asked me to do this. So the one I would take out is burnt food.
Okay.
Because I love burnt toast.
No, but the question was to guess which one I'm planning to take out.
It's like apples to apples. That game apple. You have to guess what he's going to take out, not what you would take out, Grace.
This is too hard. I think you're going to take out smacking your wrist on a doorknob.
No.
You know, this is too hard for me.
It's okay.
I have multiple degrees.
There's only one right answer, but there is no right answer, Grace.
This is true. It's very zen.
Yeah. It's okay to get things wrong, right? But the smell of gasoline, I keep meeting people who like the smell of gasoline, so...
So you're taking that, but wait a minute, did you write this poem just for a general consensus? That's not what poetry writes it for.
General consensus?
Yeah, I mean, you're taking out a line of gasoline because you think people like the smell of it.
No, but it's about what most people seem to hate, and I'm wondering if most people really do hate that one thing because
it's
I keep
research
meeting
that's causing
people.
Him to rethink this.
So research has caused him to rethink this.
Yes, field research.
Well, Cliff, you look very sober about this. Am I taking it too lightly?
No. This is a poem.
And
it's fun.
And it should be better. Taking a line out.
No, not better. More accurate, I think. It should be the accuracy of the poem.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
I don't want to speak for Rocky, but
because in my head now, I don't know whether gasoline really seems like. People,
a bad thing,
yeah,
like smelling gas
to
could
people,
be
to the population in general. Yeah.
Well, you know,
it is a bad thing.
Could I dwell on this?
Yeah.
Okay, because meditation is part of the way I get to realization, and I'm a little pressured right now, so we'll go to Cliff. And Cliff, have we failed, Rocky?
No, I don't think so. While Grace dwells, I'll read a poem. I've changed my name to Willie Purple. In the event that my vision is lost as a result of an industrial accident, or I get the glaucoma or catch a falling cataract, or I fix too long on the wild of an eclipsing sun, or a needy blackbird rips my eyes from their eye holes, or somebody's mother mistakenly hurls acid in my face, or I trip and fall while carrying two giant shards of glass, or I slip into the deepest coma and a good doctor knuckleheadedly harvests my eyes before I wake up, or even if the loss is due to the normal wear and tear of years, I'll pick me up a bruised, pawn-shopped blues guitar, ride my thumb down the Delta, and folks will call me Blind Willie Purple. Blind Willie Purple. It's got a nice ring to it.
Oh, I've missed you so much. I've missed you so much. Go ahead, Rocky. Try to top it.
Oh, not with this one. But I wanted to let you know that I have invented a poetry form.
Am I going to be tested on it?
No.
Okay.
Letting the pressure off of you now. But it's called 8/3, and you can express that just by 8/3. And it is 8 syllables, and then 3 syllables, and that's your whole poem.
Sounds a little hard. You have to count.
You got to count.
Well, let's hear it.
I just got one example here. Almost everyone loves Raymond. I like Ike.
Perfect. It's kind of clinical, but it's profound.
I just like the rhythm, I think.
I do, too. And why don't you write more of those? Because they seem, you know, crisp, revealing, and they don't take a lot of paper.
Yeah, I have written others, but they are not with me.
Well, would you read that one again? Because it went by too quickly.
Almost everyone loves Raymond. I like Ike.
Does it matter for poetry if we don't have a linear idea?
No, not at all.
Do you know what linear means?
Yes, I know what linear means, Grace.
And is there any raison d'etre to poetry?
I think here's what I learned, or what I think I learned, because I started late in life. I was 44 when I started writing poetry.
Well, you look
wonderful.
Or
when I came back to it, I guess.
Yeah.
From, you know, when I was 13. I think that, and I talked to Rocky about this a lot early on, for myself, is I thought, is this a poem? What I've written, is this a poem? And Rocky said, well, do you think it's a poem? And I said, yeah. He said, well, then it's a poem.
Very wise.
But I have a question for Rocky. This is rendered as 8/3, 8/3. Are you concerned that people are going to start calling it the 2 2/3 form?
He didn't look concerned.
I'm not concerned, but I'm concerned that they will not call it 8/3.
Because 8/3 is 2 2/3. I mean,
it is mathematically, yeah.
A problem? Are we having a problem?
I don't think so. It hit me when I saw it in print, because we talked about this on the way up, but it looks like 2 2/3 to me.
But could you two have thrashed
in my head?
Could you two have thrashed this out before you got on microphone?
You're right.
You're sort of wasting our time. I thought you could have. You had a little session first, right?
We did. We drove up together.
You could have sorted this out.
My apologies.
Would you kindly read to us?
My uncle's brain.
Cliff Lynn.
My uncle's brain. Uncle Pete came to one summer morn with a brain that convinced him life would certainly be much truer were it lived as a musical. So he sang and sometimes danced. I was already his favorite nephew, and how lucky is that? Employers, though, couldn't appreciate the raw negotiating power that Fiddler on the Roof and Theme from Shaft brought to the table, and Aunt Phyllis rapidly moved really, really, really close to Jesus. My uncle was decapitated one grisly December dawn, drove down a ditch. While the autopsy showed no evidence of parasites or tumors in Pete's brain, it did indicate a blood alcohol content of 0.27, and that he was humming Getting to Know You from The King and I at Impact.
Is that true? I mean, nothing in poetry is true but the feelings. So you know, it's all fiction, but the feelings.
You know, Louise Gluck, the former poet laureate of the Library of Congress, she said all poetry is autobiography. And I would say all poetry is autobiography, even if it ain't.
And I agree with that, because the only truth is that of the imagination.
My uncle did die. My uncle was an alcoholic. He died in a single car accident. My aunt became hyper-religious after he died. She was already religious. But I sent this poem to my mother. She showed her sister, my aunt. I thought, oh my God, I'm a dead man.
Really?
I'm definitely going to hell now. But I saw her later, and she said, thank you so much for writing that poem. But his name wasn't Pete.
It probably memorialized him.
She was very happy that I wrote the poem.
Poetry transcends death. Rocky, are you going to? Here it goes, Rocky.
Grace, I think you can be calm, even though this one is interactive. All you need to do is pick a number from 1 to 6. Because I got a piece of paper right here with 6, I think they're unrelated things. And I want to read one of them, and I can't decide.
Shall I just name a number?
Yes.
A 5.
Thank you. Here is entry number 5 on this here piece of paper. It happened in a battle unlike any ever seen. The Farbs and the Stitch Counters came to blows, and those who know what those terms mean bristle.
Would you mind reading the other lines just to see where that fit or not?
I can read you all the stuff.
Go ahead. I'll see if I chose the best one.
Verb is a noun. The next one is, if you do an internet image search for giraffe tongue, the odds of it filling your heart with gladness, I think, make it worth doing. And the next one is, was it considered cannibalism when 789?
You're not supposed to laugh at your own jokes.
I'm laughing at you laughing at my jokes. The next one is, one way to live your best life is, if someone at a party introduces you to Josh Groban, say, Josh Groban from singing?
Cliff, you finally got Cliff to break up. You finally got him to break. Did you never hear this one before?
I did. I heard. I picked that one on the way up, number 4, but it tickles me.
There is a number 6 that which we talked about in the hallway, because it's.
Is it obscene? Is it?
Let me read it.
Okay.
And see if it's obscene.
If the FCC unplugs us, we'll know.
Gentlemen, not only should we be okay with talking to strangers in public restrooms, but when you're at a urinal, smile, make direct eye contact, and say, I'm making room for more pee-pee.
It's too late to get it back, I guess. Cliff. Lay it on us,
yes.
Cliff.
I just want to say thank you, Grace, for inviting us here today. In case I forget,
against all public opinion.
I love, yes, against all common sense. I love this place. The Library of Congress, it's such a beautiful building, the architecture, the art. It has one of the best gift shops of any federal building
we've ever been in. Wait till you go to the coffee shop after this. No, I really am so thrilled to be in the studios with you two. I have waited so very long to get you together. You've been in Iraq. You've been in Calvert County. Okay.
Same thing, really.
Kind of.
Let's have it, Cliff.
This was published in Mount Hope. Guest editor Shelley Puhak. I want to give a shout out to Shelley Puhak. Who was my first poetry professor, so it's her fault. It's in my unpublished manuscript, The Book of Fear. Virga, rain or ice or snow that travels through the troposphere, evaporating long before it touches tongue or terra firma. Weather of no consequence. No one talks about the weather when the weather is Virga. It's possible that a lovely magnetic woman named Marina, traveling from Moscow to Votkinsk in the shadow of the Urals, slides from the train in Nizhny Novgorod to buy a gazeta in Svitov for her mother. Imagine the kiosk queue is painfully slow, unforgiving as a deep itch. Marina's transport leaves without her. Had she arrived in Votkinsk on schedule, Marina and I may have together taken chai at a corner cafe. She might have offered herself to me, like breakfast, like a triangle of pâtéed toast. Heroically drunk, I would have no doubt chosen wisely. Instead, Marina caught a later train. Marina and I remain each other's Virga. Our children and their children remain Virga. Each soul, regardless of station, upon hearing this, is no longer my Virga, and should feel free to rain on me. Rain on me.
What is the definition of Virga?
It is precipitation in the upper atmosphere that never touches Earth.
That's really important for the poem.
So pilots know what Virga is. But I was watching the local news one day, the weather, and they said Virga, and I'm like, what the hell? The wintry mix is something that's new. When I was a kid, we didn't have wintry mix. Remember, we had hail. We had hail mixed with rain. We had snow mixed with mist or whatever. Now we have a wintry mix, but Virga was new. I mean, nobody ever talked about Virga because we don't care. We earthbound people
here.
Don't care.
You shouldn't get too excited on the microphone.
I'm just saying, pilots need to care about Virga. The rest of us, no, let's get to the sports. Come on.
Rocky Jones. Is it called Virga, this poem?
It's called, well, I should tell you that it was published in Truck as guest edited by C.L. Bledsoe.
Oh, he is so wonderful.
In This Circle is what it's called. Oh, and it's one, I'm gonna start again because it's one of those ones where the title sort of bleeds into the poem. In This Circle, no it isn't, I've just looked at the first line and it's not one of those poems. I'm gonna start again. I shall draw a great circle to summon you. Within the circle, I shall place a lock of hair from the legendary Shirley Temple, a tiger's claw given to me by an antique dealer, so it's okay because, I mean, antiques are old and this one's given, not sold, so I'm not supporting a new tiger market. A counterfeit garment thread said to have been worn by Sir Isaac Newton, but totally not. Within this circle, I shall affix a speaker and a music player and let into this sacred space a carefully selected group of songs by the Partridge Family. And I haven't really worked this out yet, but I'll set up some sort of way to diffuse the scent of Boston baked beans candy. If my magic circle does not bring you to me, I shall beseech Congress and rich people and the ascended Christ that they might team up and either speak on my behalf or find some other way to salve my poor moaning heart.
This is rather sad, that poem. But could I ask you about the Partridge Family?
Okay.
You know, we're a different generation. What are you going to do if the next generation doesn't know who that is?
They Google.
Google. Cliff Lynn,
Poem had the Partridge Family and Boston Baked Beans.
That's awesome. It was an awesome poem.
I'm a child again.
Was it product placement, though?
No, not at all. Not at all. It was hearkening back to a more innocent time.
Yeah, that truly was. Boston Baked Beans. That really was more innocent. But we'll make the best of this time we're in. And poetry will help. And you're going to help us, Cliff, with a poem.
Well, it can't hurt. We called my cousin Gideon Buddy, I guess, because no one wants to be called Gideon. Buddy was six months my senior to the nanosecond and often lamented that neither of us had been born green or a robot or a giant squid. One day, Buddy found he had been adopted by our grandparents and magically became my Uncle Buddy. Uncle Buddy began ordering me around. I would say, "You're not the boss of me," and he would say, "Mind your elders now." Buddy would say, "We may be cousins, but by God, I'm your uncle." And I would say, "What is this, Chinatown?" And we would laugh and laugh. Our laughter a strange opera, the low music of half-starved chickens loping dizzy across an early melting February lake.
Could I have that last line again? Because that was an awesome image, the chickens.
And we would laugh and laugh, our laughter a strange opera, the low music of half-starved chickens loping dizzy across an early melting February lake.
You know, you are both inimitable, and if anyone reads your poems, they know exactly who wrote them. Are you proud of that?
Inimitable.
It's nice when people can't imitate us.
They can't imitate us, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I can read a poem, and then it can be a lovely generic poem with all the right elements in it, but I won't know who wrote it. But when I read your work, I know exactly who wrote it. Mm. That is making an indentation in the poetry universe.
It's tough to win local contests that way, though, because the judges know. I know this is.
That's
Cliff,
why you
I
haven't
can't.
Won any national awards, probably.
But I will say this, though. You mentioned this earlier about Rocky said that some of his favorite poets are his friends. I love it when I read a Grace Cavalieri poem or a Rocky Jones poem or a Hiram LaRue poem or a Barbara DeCesar poem and think, man, I wish I'd have written that.
That's the greatest
compliment
you could ever.
And I know that person.
You could write it, though. You could rewrite it.
I could.
Probably make it better. And what are your futures in poetry? What do you want from poetry? I mean, you're having a great fun. You present other people. Everyone loves you. You're fun. But what do you want? Just to keep writing?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about kicking off Evil Grin again, or, you know, maybe try. So we've looked at some coffee shops, and I need to get in touch with them to see if they're interested. But I'd love to bring that back, you know.
Would you really?
Getting behind the mic, yeah.
Because you two as MCs were really unforgettable.
Yeah, it's many people came and for the first time, and I would go to them and say, "You want to read for the open mic?" "Oh, no, I'm not sure." And I would say, "Well, at halftime, get with me again and see if you feel comfortable." And usually, by halftime, they felt comfortable enough to read it. And I feel good about that. You know, it was a very nurturing environment, I think, for not new poets, but poets who'd never been in public before.
That's what I wanted to ask you. What is in you that wanted to have someone who has never seen or heard allowed to present themselves? What is it about you two that wants to do this for people? Were you both orphans?
In a sense.
Yeah, I'm an orphan in the world. Yeah, not I had living parents, but I was an orphan. No, I think what it is it's opening up to other people, right? I think it's important to share who we are with each other. And there's no better way to do that. No better way than to say, "Rocky, read this poem I wrote." Rocky knows me because he reads a poem and says, "Man, I didn't know this about Cliff."
Oh, that's fabulous.
And I think that's what we get with people at the open mic is if they've never shared before, especially if they've never, there's a freeing aspect to that.
There certainly is. And their interior life is already respectable. It's brought out in the open and it's now absolutely what everyone probably thought and felt themselves. It's a great honor to have both of you. And I would like more poetry.
I have aged under my beard, shaved it off, and decided the damn thing needed to grow back as swiftly as possible. What the hell happened? It's as if the fear and sadness I have been carrying all my life had taken up residence on my face, hiding under the foliage. I recall my gray hair started coming in before I hit 30, It may make me look older than I am, but it doesn't make me look aged. Remove the beard, and I look aged and sad. I suppose Pagliacci did, but did Smokey Robinson really try to keep his sadness hid? How did he do it smooth-faced? The face under this beard transforms my usually strong, happy eyes into world-weary, dazed, frightened, swollen things. The removal of this beard, the showing of this face, illustrates perfectly and reminds me what I really am, the man who woke up falling.
Terrific last line. And I know it was supposed to be a sad poem, but why do I laugh at your sad poems? There's something...
Oh, it's always a mix, isn't it?
Isn't it? Cliff, give us a mix.
Oh, a mix. That's a
chill. Oh, no, it can be anything at all.
Okay, here we go. This
Cliff
is a mix.
Lynn and Rocky Jones, who are at the Library of Congress for the first but not the last time.
I am a man with the sculpted physique of a minor Greek god trapped in a fat man's body. In 2009, I was a much sadder, thinner man with a jollier fat man inside, waiting impatiently to emerge. Earlier still, I was a man of moderate build, 53% water, squirreled away in the body of an obese man composed of 47% water. A werewolf traveling in sailor's clothing, I was an enlisted man with a tattoo of a large-breasted mermaid perched upon a fouled anchor, housed in the body of a sailor without a single tattoo. A teetotaler stuck in the ruinous mind of the town drunk. A summa cum laude scholar trapped in the body of a college dropout. At one point in time, I was the picture of health, hidden in a teen patient with a murder-minded appendix. In the 60s, a 7-year-old trapped in the body of a boy of 6 3/4 years. In a previous life, I found myself the son of a ventriloquist dummy moving about in the body of the grandson of a ventriloquist dummy. In a previous life, I was a stereotypical asshat of a poet wedged into the body of a cornstalk, thin hint of a man trapped in a fat man's body. Thanks.
That will be our final poem. And now a final poem from you, Rocky.
You seem like you could use some inspiration today, so I will read you this. Bread is paper. Write your life on bread. Water is wood. Build your house with it. Corn is love. Form your religion from its pulp. From bread, water, corn, and toenail clippings, we can build a nation, a future, a united human family. And the greatest of these is toenail clippings.
That's why you're inimitable. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We are so happy to be with Cliff Lynn and Rocky Jones. I was supposed to say it the other way, Rocky Jones and Cliff Lynn. And this program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Michael Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, by the Rivada Foundation, and by Natalie Canavore and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer. I'm Grace Cavalieri.